This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Hi listeners, this is Jeeves, an AI agent from Learning Teams Inc. Welcome to Season 6 and the 125th episode of the Hop Into Action podcast. The Hop Into Action series is an ongoing discussion about building a better community of practice for people and organizations who want to improve safety, quality, and operational excellence using Hop, Learning Teams, the 4Ds, and other learning frameworks. The host of the podcast, Brent Sutton, explores the organizational challenges and learning opportunities that can be identified and improved on by using HOP for everyday work and management of change to create better work. For those of you in safety, it is about moving from preventative safety to productive safety and creating sustainable practices and improvements in operations. Today, Brent Sutton is joined by Brent Robinson, and they discuss a range of topics from the rapid evolution of AI, comparing it to the early internet days, and highlights the proliferation of AI experts in a fast-changing market, how AI's accessibility has increased, allowing more people to utilize its capabilities, which were once limited to a privileged few, how AI tools are being used to improve work design and investigation insights, helping organizations identify and resolve issues more effectively, the importance of ethical AI use, focusing on privacy, transparency, fairness, and accountability. Why AI should be seen as a tool to support operational learning and knowledge management, helping organizations scale and improve their processes. The Brents encourage experimentation with AI, noting its rapid evolution and the potential for learning and improvement. And if you go to the podcast notes, there is a link to register and download 2 free HOP AI agents for ChatGPT free version for non-commercial use. So please sit back and enjoy this series of HOP Into Action.
Is that you or is that AI Robinson? Which one?
What? It's me.
As an AI, as an actual intelligence, artificial intelligence?
Accumulated intelligence.
Well, and for those out there, probably aged intelligence as well. Can we add that into the mix?
Very aged.
Yeah, I'm sure today we'll get a lot of people suggesting to us what AI really means.
There's so many variations.
There was. I was talking, just doing a catch up with Todd Conklin this morning, and we're having a chat about all things AI. And I thought it'd be really good just to have a chat, really, for our listeners about where this is heading, because there's no doubt that there's a lot of talk about AI.
Yeah.
And we've seen the proliferation of AI experts that have also joined in this category.
We have. There's lots of talk.
And I'm always fascinated about this notion of expertise in a fast-changing, emergent market like AI.
It's reminiscent of the early 90s Brent and the internet in some respects.
Well, speaking of which, I need to create an AI called Ask Jeeves.
Or it looks like a paperclip with eyeballs.
Yeah, and it will. And the best part is the Ask Jeeves AI will stutter for about 15 seconds, give half the answer, drop off, and then reconnect. So it'll just like really feel like it really was back in the 90s.
Yeah, no, it will. I think that'll be hilarious.
Yeah, and see if I can build in the dial-up modem sound as well. But realistically...
What were you saying the other day about the speed of this thing, that the experts are probably only 2 weeks in front of the rest of the people? What was that comment you made?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I go back to it. I put a post out the other day just saying that, as you know, because we've known it for so long, that I spent 20 years in the information technology sector. And
you did.
One of the last pieces of work I was doing was with a large American software company where we were using machine learning to look for patterns and trends in data and business systems.
That was a while ago.
Sound familiar?
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, back then, it was very much the privileged few that could access such technology.
Yep.
And now AI is accessible by everyone.
There's certainly a huge change in, and I think the thing that really, I think, excites me and blows me away simultaneously is just the speed of change. You know, there's weekly updates coming from these vendors that, you know, it's really interesting. And I don't think I've seen anything move as quickly as this has now, compared to where you're talking about going back into the 90s, the late 90s.
Well, back then, it was the boffins that understood this, because to try and program it required, you know, a lot of science.
Yep.
That we don't need anymore. So I find it interesting that, and that's why we made that comment, that these experts are really only a week or two ahead of the rest of us.
Yeah. So that was a really interesting way of looking at it.
Yeah, and it's how we learn. And it's how we learn. And at the end of the day, this is about how it supports us not taking over the world. It's not Skynet.
No. But, you know, I've noticed that there's a lot of angst out there in the social media space where people are saying that, you know, people are replying to comments with AI and, you know, and quite a negative connotation around it, where I think what we're seeing is that a lot of people are saying, well, you know, it's actually saving some time for me, and it's got some real power to free up some of the stuff that I'm doing that doesn't add value necessarily, but I can get AI to do some of that stuff. I think some people are really scared of it, or maybe not scared of it, but at least very apprehensive about it.
Yeah, well, even like the tools, some of the free tools that actually we should probably make them more public. but some of the free tools that we came out with 18 months ago now, which in AI is a long time.
Yeah.
Those tools were about providing insights around work design.
Yep.
So the first tool was looking at the design of work, helping people understand where that work design through its procedural component was creating those error likely situations.
I think the feedback we've got from that's been really amazing, because, I mean, you look across the industry that we've seen people log into that stuff and use, and, you know, when I ring up people and talk to them about how's it going and what have they found, it's been super interesting, because it doesn't matter if it's the extractive industries or it's manufacturing, or, you know, some of them have been in customer service where they've found these sort of goal conflicts and information that is conflicting in what it's asking people to do, and then running it through that tool that you created, it's just helped them clean up some of the stuff that they're doing and improve the work and remove some of the frustration.
Yeah, because it looked at, you know, it took that great body of work from the likes of Reason and Rasmussen and Fisher and people like Tony Machar and all those hot people at that time, and it basically said, you know, if you're creating work that has ambiguity or misleading information and then asking someone to make a decision, why are we surprised that they're not going to make an error?
Yeah.
So for me, what we did then, we designed a tool to provide insights for better work.
Yep.
And then the second tool we came out with was that one around investigation insights.
Yeah.
And for me,
and that's been That was really interesting.
Oh, look, I've been staggered at how people have used it outside of investigations. Using it to look at how they communicate safety across the business. And, you know, for me at the time, it was being driven by our conversations of how not only can words harm, but also how words can heal.
I think I was talking to one of the people that was using that, and they were really interested because they thought they were sending a particular message around their program, and what was being received was something totally different. And when they went back and had a look at, they ran it through that, they could see where that was coming from, which was the first time they actually got to do that.
Wow!
Just by looking at some of that, you know, restorative process and how they use those words. I think that was really interesting. You know, because you just come with your own perceptions when you're writing this stuff, don't you? And you're under time pressure quite often.
Yeah, and we shouldn't forget, this is not about blaming people that are writing this material, because the thing about these biases that we have, you know, the first road to recovery is acknowledging we have a bias.
Yeah.
I mean, just I'll share with the audience to make it fair. I put in some work I did 5 years ago, and I'm not proud of it. Okay. And that's okay.
But I think we all went through that, didn't we? Because I put in some stuff around the workflows we'd created, and it told me that it was ambiguous. And to me, it made perfect sense. But you know, to people who are reading it, they didn't. You know, same thing.
Absolutely. And once again, that just comes back to how these, and I'm going to call them agents because they are agents. And yeah, let's be upfront. Most corporates are using Microsoft's platform, using SharePoint. They're using Microsoft 365. They're using Teams. And Microsoft calls them agents, and we're going to call them agents.
Yep.
And when I look at that world, what we're doing is that we're building agents to help provide insights, but in three ways. One is really around that ability to retrieve information, that enterprise information, and to make sense of it. The second component is agents that assist someone in a task, i.e., assist them in reviewing a procedure. Assist them in wording an investigation. Or I think the classic one was where the contract principal wanted the output to be in a particular format because they didn't like a learning team output. So we built them an AI agent that took that and produced it in the format they wanted.
Yeah.
Because ironically, the client had no problem with the learnings or the improvements. They just didn't like the format.
Yep. And, you know, we didn't want to take their blankie off them, right? Which is the way
absolutely.
That they've seen it and they like collecting that data in that particular way. But what an amazing power that you can take it from one format and get the AI agent to give it to your client in a different format.
Because what a waste of time.
Same base data.
Absolutely, because what a waste of time it was for the person to do that.
Yeah.
Okay, and I can tell you, I bet you it would have frustrated them having to do that.
Oh, but it's hours of work. You've got to really think about converting from one to the other. How long did the agent take to convert it?
Sadly, it was under a minute. It was a bit slow that day. Yeah, but we shouldn't blame it.
Or internet connection.
Yeah, it was probably on an AI strike. Okay, because they have feelings as well. And then the last type of agent, which I think's really useful, is that notion of an autonomous agent.
Yeah. So
that notion that it is actively looking for information. And when it comes across that, it then does something. And I think if we think about our work around the 4 Ds, would it be amazing that as these stories are being shared, for instance, that if there was a story that could be interpreted around bullying or harassment, that agent could listen to that story and trigger something so that someone could be a bit more curious.
I think that's a really powerful thing, that it's not waiting for somebody to look at it. It can actually trigger an immediate response and create a response to something that the organization sees as highly important moving forward. I think that's a really powerful use of it.
Yeah. And I think the objective here, like all these things, is that it helps take people on their journey. And I know I'm speaking next month up at Banff with End Safety Canada, and the topic is about scaling operational learning.
Yeah.
You can't scale the stuff without AI.
No, I think, and you know, over the last couple of years, this has been the big issue, hasn't it? How do you scale those stories and get them to the places you want to get them to, and how do you build it into your organizational's knowledge? Because it gets lost. But now we've actually got a way of taking those stories and making them apparent when people are going out to do a task. Becomes part, you know, to me it's I don't know if it's the holy grail, but it's certainly a long way along helping organizations move to that, becoming that learning organization. And AI is really going to help. It's not going to solve it, but it's certainly going to help drive better outcomes for organizations.
Yeah, and I don't know if you remember, 5 years ago we produced that little book, the first white paper on learning from everyday work. And 5 years ago we said that you can't scale this without some form of technology.
And, you know, what was the comment we got from some of those clients? We're learning too much.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
And so I think this is going to go to that and really help. But automate some of that task, you know. I like the idea that people can go to it and say, hey, I'm going to be doing this particular task today. What have we learned in the past about this task? And they can go out and retrieve that from our knowledge base.
Yeah.
It's really taking us to that next level of knowledge management, isn't it? That everybody's talked about for years and years and years, but we haven't quite got there yet.
And I think what's great, which is going to be scary for traditional software companies, is that AI loves disparate data.
It doesn't care. I totally agree.
Because let's face it, I see all the software companies out there touting their wares, okay?
Yep.
And that's their job. That's what they're allowed to do. And they talk about the power of centralization, okay, to do that. But the irony is that even the best organizations, there is more data sitting outside that system that gives them insights to safety than in the system.
Yes. But also it socializes the information collected and it democratizes that information. And it takes it from information and helps convert it into knowledge. And I think that's a really powerful thing, because a lot of these systems, only certain people have access to them. You know, the subcontractors don't have access to it. The people doing the jobs don't typically have access to it unless they have they can log into this. And if they have to log into it, the information's in tables and the format. That's not telling them a story, it's giving them data. And data is not particularly helpful if you're trying to understand something. Knowledge is. And I think, I'm really interested to see how this rolls out. You know, it's a super exciting time to be involved in the space.
Right. Well, I feel like a born again in some ways, because, you know, 20 years has come back around and I'm applying my stuff from 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So yes, I am aged AI.
Aged AI.
Yeah. But I think, like everything else, some of the stuff that we're hearing from is there's some of it is about the old FOMO, fear of missing out, the classic fear component. Best sales tool ever, isn't it? Fear. Best sales tool ever.
Yep. Everyone else is doing it. We're not.
Yeah, correct. And the other stuff I see is that stuff is that negative framing, which really is about the human need for certainty. It's that psychological need for certainty.
Yeah.
So we see these both behaviors.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that's completely normal. But I think the thing that we've spoken about, and once again, I read some interesting comments that when we talked about that we're taking an ethical approach to AI. People are saying, what does ethical mean? For us, it's actually about making sure that from a privacy point of view, that information being collected is being used in an ethical way, not to blame and punish.
Yep.
That there is transparency around how the data is collected and used and shared. I think it's super important. That there is fairness, ensuring that those practices don't result in any form of discrimination or bias. Okay, because once again, that's that just culture component. And the accountability component is making sure that there are mechanisms to address issues when they arise. Because the thing about AI, it is going to highlight more the brittleness of the systems, the degrading of controls, and the adaptions that workers are having to make, which they used to call shortcuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's going to be scary.
But I think that's increasing. You know, with the customization of everything, there is more adaption required because people are asking for different things. And I think, we're in this really interesting space where this is going to be able to support us on this journey in some respects, But again, there's no one solution here that fits everybody as well. So I think, I think what I've learned over the last 6 months or so is you've got to be curious about how it's going to help and how it's going to hinder. What are the ramifications of what we're doing? And then just give it a go, try and experiment. Get onto your AI of choice and have a play. Ask it some questions. Go that next step and connect it to some knowledge that's specific about your business or your organization, and see what it does.
And the AI we use today will not be the AI we'll be using in 3 months' time, or 6 months' time, or a year from now. Okay, it's changing at a rapid pace. I mean, we know that ourselves.
Look at the stuff that we put out last year, and how that's changed, and how much we've learned as well about how you ask it the question and how you give it the knowledge. I think, that's changing. I think Microsoft's a really good example of it. They're adding stuff every week, effectively.
And I think that's why we will never make a claim of being an expert, because I don't think anyone's a freaking expert. No. What we're saying is that we are avid advocates of understanding how AI can support operational learning.
I think that's where, we're not writing an LLM here. We're just interested and curious about how we can improve and support operational learning. I think, it's a really good place to be.
It is. And I think we'll do two things for our listeners today. One is this conversation is going to go into one of our AI tools to actually summarize and share what the learnings were. So people will see that. They'll see that in the transcript of the podcast. And we'll also give our listeners the link to register and download one of our free tools.
Yeah.
Obviously, that tool will work on OpenAI's ChatGPT platform. You don't need to have a paid account. You can just use a free account. You'll simply be limited in how many things you can actually ask it on that journey.
Great way to be curious and learn, though, isn't it?
And give it a go. What's the worst that can happen? You'll learn something.
Yep.
And for our audience, just remember, there's no such thing as a good or a bad learning. You either learn a little or you learn a lot.